This is Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams.
Hello, welcome to Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams. Today we're going to be talking about Ronnie's 10 points of light. Chief, welcome to the table.
Well, they're not exactly my 10 points of light. They happen to be a consensus activity that started off some 30 years ago with a conversation about what does it take to run a fire department.
Well, let's start picking those off one by one. We got 10 of them, so we're going to go a little while here. What's number one?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background about what we're going to talk about in general. And I'm going to refer to it as fundamentals.
Okay.
When you look at a firefighting organization, and we're all in the fire protection business, it's easy to recognize that they're all drastically different from one another. I mean, a wildland fire agency doesn't look like an airport crash crew. An airport crash crew doesn't look like a suburban fire department that doesn't look like a metro, blah, blah, blah. It's really easy sometimes as you look at that noise level of all this difference to not understand a very simple premise, and that is they all have some things in common. They all have some things in common that if they don't have those things, then there's a remote possibility they're not a functional organization. You know, you're kind of the one that coined that term 10 points of light. I've never used that.
Well, I kept seeing you doing the presentation, and I said, that's the 10 points of light. I'm into taglines, and I think of Ronnie's 10 points of light.
Well, I'll give you a little history, and then we'll talk about what those 10 points are. This came about as a direct result of a meeting that was held in Alexandria, Virginia, with the International City Management Association way back in the 1980s. And there was a meeting held with Warren Isman, a guy named Tom Hawkins, and Gary Breeze from the International Association of Fire Chiefs, meeting with a bunch of city manager types and the president of the ICMA. And they got into this discussion about how come it's so hard to get fire departments to actually conform to a common set of guidelines. And this guy said, well, why don't you do like law enforcement does and have an accreditation model? Like a hospital's got an accreditation model, engineers got an accreditation. And the challenge was, what is common about the fire department that we can all agree to? Well, that resulted in the creation of a group called the National Fire Services Accreditation Task Force. The Accreditation Task Force had a bunch of people on it, that names that will become less obscure as time goes on, but it was guys like Charlie Rule and Ray Picard and Martell Thompson and Bill Killen and a bunch of people who all sit down around a table and said, are there things that every fire department has in common? And as we started structuring these components, we found out that there were essentially 10 categories of activity that every fire department has, or it doesn't really function as a fire department. And that's where these 10 categories came from. They subsequently evolved into the self-assessment model that was used for the accreditation model for fire protection. That's where the idea got started. Now I can explain what those 10 categories are. Everybody is affected by these 10 categories because as you're sitting here listening to me, I'm sure that you can relate really quickly as to whether this exists in your department or not. All right? Category number one has to do with governance. Do you have the legal authority to do what you do? I'll give you an example. If you're in law enforcement, you better have the power of the state to carry a sidearm, or you better not use deadly force.
Oh, I'll come back to haunt you.
Yeah, it'll come back to haunt you. In other words, you got to know what your limits to your authority are. You got to know what the scope of your authority is. And so there's a category that we call governance. Once you are in charge of something, what is it you're in charge of? That leads to category number two, which is risk assessment. What is risk assessment? Risk is what's on the ground and what's happening in your community that creates the problem you have to deal with. Risk assessment is the most fundamental expression of demographics, topographics, and economics. It's what's on the ground.
I look at that as, why do you exist?
Why do you
What's
exist?
Your purpose?
What's your mission? What's your mission? This is where mission statements come from. This is where certain things come from about you have responsibility to act. I'll give you a good example. We just had a recent devastating event in Texas where a facility that was storing agricultural chemicals detonated and killed a whole bunch of firefighters. That was a risk assessment issue. Did they know it was there? Did they know how much of it was there? And did they have any idea what was going to happen if something went wrong? That's what risk category two is all about.
Well, you know, I see, too, that this is where one of the great challenges of the fire service is today, because that is changing dramatically.
Oh, gosh.
And you have to be honest with the reality that some of this stuff isn't needed anymore.
Well, I think it also points to things like, and let's just kind of steal some things out of the headlines. Scientists today, Steve Kerber from UL and Dan Madrikowski, are starting to give us information that things that we thought were true for 50 years are no longer true. Dan Madrikowski, for example, is demonstrating that the very activity of the fire department itself drives fire behavior on the inside of a building. We've never really talked about that much in the past. So risk assessment is an important part of governance, because if you're supposed to be doing something, this is the something you're supposed to be doing. That leads to category number three, and category number three is, what kind of a structure are you going to put together to cope with the problem that you've been assigned? Follow the line of logic. Is it one leads to two, two leads to three? Three, okay. Well, number three has to do with have you, in effect, put together some kind of a management model, or do you have kind of an organizational structure, and so forth? That leads to category number four, which is finance. Can you afford it or not? And by the way, there are some fire agencies that don't have any money but still have the first three components.
Sure, there's no reason not to.
There's no reason not to. There are departments that they may not have a lot of money, but they got this problem.
Well, one thing's for sure, you're not going to get financed if you don't have the first three.
You got the first three to justify the finances.
That's correct.
Okay. Now that leads to number four is finance. It leads to stability, financial stability, and so forth. And that leads to category number five, which, okay, now that you know you got the problem, and now that you know you got some money, and now that you know that you've got an organization, what programs are you going to use to reduce the risk? What are you going to do? I'll give you a good example of how that's changing. More and more sprinkler systems are removing the risk of major fire loss in commercial buildings. It's getting harder and harder to build a building that's not sprinklered.
Well, in California, a mandatory residential sprinkler system.
That's
so
correct.
You're going to see the fire threat continue to decline.
It will continue to decline in proportion to risk mitigation. Category five is, what kind of programs are we talking about here? We're talking about fire suppression, fire prevention, public education, hazardous materials, emergency medical services, disaster response, blah, blah. How many programs can a department have? As many as they need. How many programs are the minimum? The minimum number needed.
Yeah.
I mean, there are organizations that do only one of those. All right. So once you have that, what's the next most logical thing you need to be thinking about? Well, once you've got programs into place, then you've got to have an adequate amount of staffing, and you've got to have an adequate amount of facilities to cope with that. So that's category six and category seven. First off, you look at human resources. What do you have to have? What kind of staffing configuration? What kind of resources do you need to put on the table? What kind of stations do you have? I'll give you a good example. If you looked at the inventory of a wildland firefighting agency, they don't have many type 1 pumpers. They have type 3s because they're different. You don't go to many major metropolitan departments and find a bunch of pickup trucks downtown, because what they need downtown are heavy-duty pumpers. So those two categories, what do you think comes about once you hire people and you got a bunch of technology? You got to have a training program. That's the next category, training and education. Once you have training and education, that has to prepare those people using this money with this organizational structure to address this risk. Now, what I'm pointing out here, if you're following my line of logic, is each one of these categories leads to the need for the next category. Once you have people and once you have equipment, you must train them. Then the next category we have is the training program itself. What should you be training on? The problems that you're exposed to. Mm-hmm. Any reasonable firefighting agency that I know of doesn't base their training on some abstract thought. They base it upon what they need to know. You got a swift water rescue problem under risk, then you better have a swift water rescue training program. Then that leads to this concept of internal resources that help you do your job, and that's communications and water supply and that sort of thing. And then the last category is called external coordination, meaning mutual aid, how do you interact with the federal government, how do you interact with the state government, etc. Now, what I've just described in 10 minutes is very thoroughly laid out in a manual called the Manual of Self-Assessment, published by the Center for Public Safety. My personal belief is that every firefighter who believes that they're a professional, and I'm not talking about being paid or not, but the fact that they believe that they need to be well aware of what they're doing, should take a look at that model and ask themselves two real simple questions. Do I know the answers to all the questions? Number two is, if I don't know the answers, where do I get the information?
Well, you might even add to that, even asking the right questions to begin with.
Right.
It's easy to cloud ourselves and not want to ask certain questions because we don't necessarily want that answer.
Right.
Funding is a huge issue right now in public safety. And if we don't get proper funding, whether it be for personnel or for equipment or what have you, then some of this other stuff falls away. Without proper funding, you're not doing proper training. So this thing actually works in reverse, too, that as you start clipping stuff off, it starts working its way backwards.
Well, the way I wouldn't say it works itself backwards as much as I've characterized it as being a cycle mm-hmm. that starts and goes through a process of developing competency and then goes back to the first and starts all over again. Is that you're constantly going through this improvement stage. The more you know, the more you need to know. And the more you need to know, the more you get to know.
Well, that also gets you to a threshold where it gets kind of spooky, because as you begin to learn things you didn't know, you go, whoa, wait a minute. Let's go back and see if this is something we really want to do, either because the community won't support it, city council won't support it, or there's not enough funding, or there's too much regulation, or NFPA this, or standard that, or whatever.
The reason I proposed talking about it in this table talk thing is that there's a lot of dialogue centered about, well, why are we doing stuff like that? Why don't we just do what we've always done? If you always do what you always did, you always get what you always got. And that may not be what your community wants. My recommendation, especially at the rank of about fire captain, is that you start becoming familiar with this concept. You don't have to become an expert at it. You just got to become familiar with it. By the time you make battalion chief, you ought to be knowledgeable enough that you could speak intelligently about all 10 of those categories by having specific information readily available. By the time you get to be a fire chief, you better have all the answers. You better know why you're doing what you're doing and how those all interrelate. That's my line of logic. Now, I've engaged in debate about this, and some people say, I don't need to know that. You know, what's it going to do to me? You know, how's it going to help me put water on a fire? Well, stop and think about that one statement. How do you put water on a fire? Staffing, resources, training, risk assessment, blah, blah, blah. All of this stuff is designed in the self-assessment model, and these 10 points of light is designed to make you the professional you think you are. You need to be the expert on the anatomy and physiology of your fire department. I would look any self-respecting fire chief in the eye and say, you need to know more about your community than anybody else does. That's how you do it.
Well, you know, another aspect of this that comes to mind is that it goes to some of our previous table talk discussions. And that is, if you're interested in promoting or if you're interested in becoming a fire chief someplace, these are subject matters that you must master in some form in order to be able to get into those positions, because that's what those people do. They manage these 10 issues. And some of that is not out on the point where you can see it when you're down at the low level, because you're not engaged. You may consume part of it. You may have to be a part of it operationally, but you're not organizing it. You're not orchestrating. You're not fighting for it. You're not the one having to do the paperwork and the grants and all the parts that go into making that all work. So that's 10 issues that I think people need to focus on.
Well, we call them the 10 basic categories and fundamentals of fire protection management. And it's characterized as being flexible enough that I can make that fit almost any fire department that you've got.
Now, as you're doing a national training programs, are you finding anybody with resistance to any of these issues?
Yes.
Which ones are causing the most headaches for folks?
Well, I'm not sure I'd characterize resistance and headaches mean the same thing. And I'll tell you why. There's a lot of people that look at this kind of methodology and they say, we've gotten along for years without it. Why bother? And they may be partially right. Okay. On the other hand, there are another group of people who say, we're trying to raise the bar. And the only way to raise the bar is to know where the bar is. you got to have a baseline. You got to have some kind of an idea of where you are. My personal belief is that the people who resist this the most, for all intents and purposes, are kind of on the waning side of their career. They don't want to know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't care that they don't know what they don't know. I would submit that this discussion here probably relates more to somebody who is on their way up the chain of command than somebody who's on their way down the chain of command. Younger chief officers may not find this stuff particularly exciting, but when they're sitting across the table from an election board, or a selection board, I should say, selection board is saying, we got three candidates here. Candidate number one knows about all 10 of these categories and has answers. Candidate number two knows about the 10 categories but doesn't have any answers. Candidate number three doesn't know anything and doesn't have any answers. Which one do you think we're going to pick to hire?
Well, it's the other aspect of this is I can certainly understand the individual saying, you're making this too complicated. Our job is pretty straightforward. Put the wet stuff on the red stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. How complicated is that? Well, it's very complicated when you look at the mechanics involved in actually making that happen. And it gets further complicated when you look at municipal water systems and the maintaining of the motor pool and building codes and the fire marshal and all the other aspects of this. It gets very three-dimensional very quickly. So the idea that we're overcomplicating it, I think, is not true. We're identifying all the components and trying to break it down into manageable pieces that we can then work with and digest.
I like the word manageable pieces because that's what it really is. It's a matrix of opportunity to seek improvement.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're at the end of this segment. Any closing thoughts for the group?
I guess my response to this particular piece of information is kind of going back to my last summary remarks about the fact that if you're upward mobile, you need to know about this system. If you want to stay where you are, stay there.
Well, if that's your comfort zone, there's nothing wrong with staying where you're at either.
That's right.
I don't think anybody has to move up. If you're going to stay where you're at, be the best that you can be.
The best you can be.
And with that, we're at the end of this segment of Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams. Until next time, let's be safe out there.
This has been Table Talk with Ronald J. Coleman and Michael S. Williams, produced and distributed by the Fire Services Training Institute. Production assistance by Mark A. Ward. Special thanks to Chief Michael Dyer and the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Remember, train like your life depends on it, because it does.
Table Talk programming is intended for personal and organizational use only. Any duplication or commercial use is prohibited.